Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, good morning. There's just a ton of things, as always, to talk about here. And a little bit, as always, behind the curve, because I'm reading, and they go, oh, no, I got a show to start. And I know I probably keep saying that way too much, but it is true, because there's always last-minute things happening. There's always extra news. And that's the thing about radio. You never feel like you have enough, you know, and I'll get through maybe a third or less of the material I have prepared, and I still don't feel like I have enough. So that's just kind of how it goes. All right. So this morning, we're going to be introducing a new feature to the show. Last half hour of the show, we're going to have the Not Ready for Facebook vaccine report. And the reason I titled this is because I'm having problems with Facebook. I'm on my third 30-day suspension. And fortunately, they're running a little bit consecutive, but they're, at least they're overlapping a little bit. So it's going to amount to about a 60-day, 30-day suspension. And it's all from the same post. And the post concerns what's happening in Wuhan, China. In fact, One American News just had a broadcast that Senator Josh Hawley is looking into the origins of the coronavirus in Wuhan, China. They're still asking the wrong question, because the question is not the origin of the virus. The question is the origin of the vaccine, because the vaccine is the problem, not the virus. The virus, well, yes, it's obviously a problem if you caught the virus, and it's especially a problem if you didn't get the treatment that would have cured the virus, and you were basically left to die because of Dr. Fascist. You know, the ignorant doctors, the people that didn't help you, and or your family or your friends or whoever else, you know, succumbed to this virus when they didn't have to. You know, this is one of the greatest genocides, needless. Of course, all genocides are needless. But the thing is, there was no need for a pandemic. There was no need for, 99% of the people to die. Obviously people, you know, catch the coronavirus, is going to add to whatever else they have. I'm not talking about the people that are supremely vulnerable to any virus, really, at that point in life. But the thing is, for the 99.97% of people that are you know, immune to this and will only get at worst moderate symptoms, the folks there that caught this, or the vulnerable population above that, which is like 0.03% of the population. That's still a lot of people, but I mean, it's nowhere near, you know, 500,000 or whatever it is. Anyway, point being that this is curable, all right? This has always been curable. We knew it was curable. I knew it was curable at the end of February last year. I announced it was curable March 2nd when I got the study from Dr. Raoult in Marseille, France, when he knew it was curable. You know, he knew it was curable first, and then Dr. Zelenko, you know, I guess either read the same study or came to the same conclusion based on what he knew, using hydroxychloroquine, zinc, and azithromycin, and now they've added ivermectin, vitamin D, vitamin C, and some other things. And it's just a total treatment that works. It's worked in thousands upon thousands upon thousands of patients, both in this country and worldwide. You know, it works. So the pandemic is artificial. The pandemic is there. Here's what we're concluding. Here's what I'm concluding. The pandemic is there to sell the vaccines, all right? The lockdowns were there to generate the fear to sell the vaccines. The masks, which we all know, anybody who studies this even for a few minutes knows, the masks that don't work are there to remind you that there's a COVID, you know, virus out there, and that, you know, you have to do certain things in order not to spread it, even though those things don't work, because the virus spreads anyway. I mean, the virus has already spread around this country I don't know how many times. That's what viruses do. You know, now is it affecting a lot of people? No. In fact, I was going to look up, and this is why I'm a little bit late this morning. Well, not late, but show started with like a minute and 12 seconds. It's like, oh, better get going here. But the thing was, I was trying to find the latest numbers on how many people are actually dying from this. And the problem is, you can never find out how many people are truly dying from it, because the information is wrong. You know, the information, it concerns, you know, all this different stuff. The tests are bogus. You know, as one doctor reported that, you know, up to 100% of the PCR tests for COVID are false. All right. So how do you judge a disease with a test that wasn't designed for viruses, which is being used to test for viruses? That's a contradiction. All right. That's malpractice right there. You know, amongst many malpractices, there's so many malpractice things here. Dr. Fascist not only shouldn't have his medical license, he should be in jail for, you know, the rest of his miserable life. because he's made a lot of other people miserable. He's, you know, like I say, he's responsible for everyone that died from COVID who didn't get hydroxychloroquine, you know, in the first week of the virus infection, who could have been cured. That's on him. Okay. It's on the whole government bureaucratic establishment. Unfortunately, it's also on President Trump. But his crime is being lied to and letting it happen. You know, I mean, that's negligence. That's just, you know, that's not purposeful. That's not malicious on his part. I think he absolutely believed he was doing the right thing, but he got the wrong information, and he didn't go to the right people to get the right information. Okay, so we'll talk about that more in the second, the last half hour of the show. I'm giving a lot of previews ahead of time. All right, what I want to talk about in this half hour is the election correction report. Okay, and so here's what's really happening. The action right now is in Windham, New Hampshire. And I just at the last minute, you know, recently before the show started, asked some friends to post some things on my Facebook page. So the reason I have to ask people to post is because I still have the 60-day suspension, which was only 30 days, which was supposed to be over by now. And so it wasn't because it keeps getting extended. So that's what's going on. And it's just, let me check a couple things real quickly here. Okay, fine. I get messages all the time the show goes on, so it gets a little complicated here sometimes. All right. So the election correction report, the main action right now, like I say, is in New Hampshire. And so New Hampshire held a meeting. I think it was the last night or the night before. They held a meeting. I'm trying to get a YouTube. I'll post it onto my page. I'll bring up the report here in a second. Actually, I'll bring it up now. But what's happening is the three places that everybody's watching are Arizona, Maricopa County. They're watching Windham, New Hampshire, this little town in New Hampshire. And New Hampshire's a little state. So we're not talking about a whole lot of people. But I think most of the town turned out for the meeting. It looks like May 4th, so that would have been last night. So most of the town turned out for this meeting because the town of Windham, they're basically picking they're picking a sabotage person to do the audit. They're picking a leftist, you know, ultra liberal, you know, someone that thinks that preaching the line that there was no election fraud, that it's all a conspiracy, that it's a bunch of nonsense. Okay, and we of course know that's not true. In fact, I did something interesting yesterday. It was a revelation hit me that I put this. I asked a friend of mine to post this. I said, for your information, Watergate was about election fraud before the vote and the cover-up after the election. Sound familiar? 2020 isn't over. So for all the folks that think that Watergate was the worst political scandal in history, what was it really about? It was about a break-in at the Watergate Hotel. It was about spying. Okay, this should sound familiar. It was about spying by the Republican Party on the Democrat Party. Okay, it was about Nixon spying on McGovern. It was about dirty tricks. You know, cancel culture of its day. It was about money, you know, illegal money changing hands. It was about the organization called CREEP, which is one of the best named political organizations in history, the Committee to Re-Elect the President, CREEP, Committee to Re-Elect the President. I don't know, but anyway, they called it CREEP, all right? And names should be familiar to you, Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Segretti, Deep Throat, when you can actually say that on the radio. Well, I guess I can't. I already did. But the spy, the mystery person, the source, you know, we still don't know who it is, although people are they've drawn conclusions. We can do like a Watergate review. But when you think about it, what happened with Nixon were all the things he did before the election to steal it. Okay, and that's basically what Watergate was about. And then everything he did after the election to cover it up. Okay, so you think about that. There's a direct parallel to what the Democrats are doing today. I mean, it's the same as Watergate 2. You know, maybe we should start calling it that, call it Watergate 2, because you've got an election that was stolen completely with things that were set up before the election. You know, so the creep, Biden the creep, it seems to fit. Committee to re-elect the president, you know, or Biden the insurrectionist. You know, I mean, and the whole Democrat crew, you've got from the voting machines to ballot harvesting, you know, all this stuff, right? You know what I'm talking about. Right? So from everything that happened, from the recounts of ballots, the stuffing of extra ballots, the truckloads of printed ballots, the computer shifting of votes, you know, and that doesn't count all the other things that happened, the changing of the rules, changing of the laws, the illegal things that were done, you know, by the judges that didn't take the cases, the secretaries of state that exceeded their authority, the governors that refused to enforce, you know, the laws and change the laws, and the state legislatures that let it all happen. You know all this. You know the story, all right? You know, so that's everything that happened after the election and everything happened before the election. It's Watergate. Watergate revisited, right? Because you've got everything that happened before the election to steal it and everything that's happening now after the election to cover it up. And what that includes is in Windham, New Hampshire, making sure that a left-wing fascist is in charge of the election audit, who, of course, will find, oh, everything's fine. You know, and the people of New Hampshire aren't stupid. They know that. Okay, so the people of New Hampshire got up and said, all right, you know what? We want Joe Van Pulitzer. Okay, so who's Joe Van Pulitzer? This is somebody you should know. Joe Van Pulitzer is an incredible human being. He looks like a mad scientist. He looks kind of like a younger version of the Doctor in Back to the Future. Okay, so he gets up there. And, you know, and you see him, he's got the hair kind of frizzed out and he's got the glasses and the big eyes and he gets so excited with what he's doing. Right? This is the guy that can tell, you know, what hand lotion you use in the morning by the residue in the ballot. Okay. This is the guy that knows, you know, whether you smoke or not. This is the guy that knows the type of ink, you know, where it was made, what batch it is, you know, what country it comes from. Yeah, he knows everything. He can tell what ballots have been folded and which ones haven't. He can tell which signatures are real and which are made by a machine. He can tell all this kind of stuff. This is the guy you want in charge of the audit, okay? Is he political? I don't know. I don't think so. But he's still, you know, I mean, everybody has politics. So if you get rid of everybody, it's like trying to find a juror that had never heard of George Floyd. Well, that's impossible. So the question is not whether they're impartial. The question is whether they can render an impartial verdict. And that's where it gets tough, because that's what you're really trying to decide. So when you're looking around, you know, when they talk about guilt by association, I don't know who Joe Van Pulitzer is, you know, associated with. From what I've seen him testify. He strikes me as an honorable person, and I really love to see him in charge of the audit, because I know what he's going to find. And that's part of the fun of this, too. I know what he's going to find, all right? He's going to find that the New Hampshire election, like every other election in this country, was rigged. Okay, to a greater or lesser extent. All right. So who do these? Well, let me get the article up here. So who do these guys want in New Hampshire? The town selectmen. Okay. So if you know about New England, all right, New England has a tradition called a town meeting. It's the ultimate in democracy. That's where the whole town can show up. And it made sense back when towns were, you know, 20 to 100 people. Well, towns are a little bigger now, but they still have this town meeting, and literally anybody can show up. And so when they pass bills, the town votes on them. You know, and the town selectmen are like the representatives. They're like the city council or the more like the county commissioners, you know, or either one. So anyway, so that's what they call them in New England, town, the selectmen, and not select people. It sounds kind of funny. Anyway, so the select folks, you know, picked this guy. Well, let me just read the article. And this is from one of my favorite sources, Uncover DC. Windham, New Hampshire Board of Selectmen ignores concerns surrounding audit integrity. This is by Michelle Edwards. And this is May 4th, so this was yesterday. Windham, New Hampshire continues to be the spotlight as the Board of Selectmen, led by co-chair Ross McLeod, snubbed the voices of hundreds of concerned citizens packed into Windham High School last night, despite evidence that the auditor selected to conduct the forensic audit of the 2020 general election has ties to left-leaning organizations and George Soros-funded initiatives. Well, do you need to know anything else? Do I have to go further? I mean, that pretty much sums it up, all right? So you've got a left-wing George Soros-funded fanatic who's going to try and stop the election audit, or you've got a Joe Van Pulitzer, you know, a little crazy, but God knows his stuff, right? He's got like what 200 patents on forensic investigative stuff. So that's the guy I want, and that's the guy the town wants too. So the three select people, which might find themselves out of a job really soon, at least I hope so, are saying no. So it said, go check out the article. It's on Uncover DC, and especially check the video, you know, and like I said, I'm trying to get it posted on my timeline, but the video, it's on YouTube. It's pretty cool too. The town was screaming and yelling. They packed this high school and they basically, and it's really funny. Most people are not wearing masks. Okay. Because they've decided they've had enough, and the town select people, of course, are dutifully wearing their masks, you know, even though they're miles away from the crowd. All right. Back to the article. Emotions and adrenaline were running high at Monday night's meeting, which started at the Windham Town Hall conference room and quickly moved to Windham High School. You know why? There are too many people for the town hall, all right? And the select people got scared, and so they moved away. They moved to a place where they think they can be better protected. Anyway, where hundreds – it's probably the whole town, right? Hundreds of concerned citizens assembled, expecting their voices to be heard following Bruce Benton's publicly declared, quote, motion of reconsideration regarding the selection of Mark Lindemann. Okay, Mark Lindemann's the Marxist. So just remember, Marxist, okay? He's the one that doesn't want the audit to go through. I'll tell you more as the article goes on. Confusion surrounded the location of the much anticipated meeting, with reports of roads being blocked by police before the meeting. Yeah, they didn't want you there. So not only have they got this problem, the police unfortunately are being used as election suppression. We keep talking about the Democrats. Well, these new laws are suppressing the election. No, the government's suppressing the election. Anytime a fraudulent vote gets in, that's suppressing the vote of an honest, law-abiding person. Okay, that's how it goes. All right, Windham, New Hampshire. This is from Rockingham Alert. They talk about how various places are crowded. You've got to see this meeting. This meeting was fabulous. Anyway. Back to the article. As previously published by Uncover DC at the April 26th Board of Selectmen meeting, in a 3-1 vote, Bruce Bretton voted against Lindemann, the Marxist. The board voted to select the team of Mark Lindemann and Andrew Appel to perform the forensic audit. Following the announcement, as revealed by Uncover DC and shared by Gateway Pundit, which is another great source you'll find. Uncover DC and Gateway Pundit are the places I go mostly for this election correction report because they're so good. And I watch One American News because they've got Christina Bob right out there in Arizona, interviewing people all day long. So between those two sources, One American News, Gateway Pundit, and Uncover DC, you can really find out what's going on with the real story of the election, the one that everybody else is trying to cover up, because this is, after all, Watergate 2. All right. Anyway, so the article says it has since surfaced that Lindemann's employer verified voting, despite claiming to be nonpartisan, has accepted grants from the left-leaning MacArthur and Threshold Foundations. MacArthur, they're the folks that fund all that public radio and public TV stuff. Have you seen them? Let me do my NPR voice. And now the following program is being paid for, or was it? Let me try it again. And now the following program is how do they say it? Is sponsored by so-and-so MacArthur Foundation. There we go. All right. Yeah, if you're seeing those announcements, you know what I'm talking about, right? I'm trying to get my Alistair Cook Masterpiece Theater voice, right? Anyway, so the it's somebody's name, Leo and Sue, MacArthur Foundation that funds all the public radio. So they're basically socialists. I mean, if they're funding, socialist radio and socialist TV. All right. Anyway, Threshold, I'm not familiar with the Threshold Foundation. All right. So he says MacArthur and Threshold, among others, all with ties to the openly declared shadow campaign that drove the 2020 election. As reported earlier, here we go. Mark Lindemann is the co-director of Verified Voting, a nonprofit with a history of working with left-leaning organizations, including the Brennan Center for Justice, the American Civil Liberties Union, the Leadership Conference for Civil and Human Rights, and Common Cause. Also worth noting, Verified Voting Board Chair Barbara Simmons also sits on the board of Democracy Alliance, an influential Soros-funded donor collective. Okay, so Brennan, that's not Walter Brennan. Okay, that's Chief Justice, I believe it was John Brennan, who was the most liberal, left-leaning, probably Supreme Court justice of all time, and now has a Brennan Center for Justice? Hardly. Anyway, it's a left-leaning think tank that funds all kinds of causes and does other stuff. All right, so as Monday night's meeting at Windham High School got underway. Okay, so it was 2 nights ago. All right. Screw surrounded whether Mark Lindemann finally answered the 5 questions that were on the minds of many that were never answered after he apparently passed out during the committee's recent Zoom meeting. Well, that was it. I don't even know what the 5 questions are. They don't state it in the article, and I wish they did. Anyway, I'm going to leave this article here, but that's all this stuff, all my articles I'm now posting at Free Talk, at freetalk.pp/actionradio. Okay, freetalk.app, and that's 2 p's, freetalk.app/actionradio. That's where you'll find all this stuff. So kind of working backwards here through all my different things. Do they have anything else on this I want to say? All right, and we're expecting, Chief Dan Skyhorse is going to hopefully check in with us. We have a Creech Chat report for a while. We got to talk. We got to talk about all the stuff going on. And so let me see what's happening here. So okay, good. All right. So I apologize for checking on messages and things as I'm doing this. Pretty soon to come online. We'll have that all taken care of at some point fairly soon. I don't have to sound like I'm just kind of doing this myself, which I am for now. All right. Punching, doing mouse work and things like that. Okay. Gateway is another excellent source. Joe Hoft, and I'm trying to try and get one of the Hoft brothers, Joe and Jim, who put out Gateway Pundit. It says, hey, New Hampshire, look at who Verified Voting, the firm selected to audit Windham, is associating with. So I want to get you to see how much of this is new information. All right. So Verified Voting and Mark Lindemann are the people that were selected by the selectmen, not by the town. The town wants Joe Van Pulitzer. Okay, so that just to sum up, that's what's going on. So the town wants to vote one way, and the select men that's what they call them, you know, voted another. We reported last week that New Hampshire officials selected verified voting, the same entity that said the Arizona election fraud claims were fake, and worked to try and get the Maricopa County audit shut down. So this seems to be a no-brainer. Would you select the people that tried to shut down the Maricopa audit to do your audit if you actually wanted to find the correct result? No. You select audit. I mean, this is pretty obvious. Anyway, that's got a big letter here. Let's see. And this is one that went to the Honorable Karen Fan, president of the Arizona State Senate. And this is from a bunch of folks, including Mark Lindemann. And the paragraph they highlighted, we are deeply in Arizona Senate's recent decisions to engage Cyber Nation. This is a really tiny letter. I'm trying to read it here. This is engage Cyber Ninjas. News reports say was, quote, funded by a Trump supporter who promoted conspiracy theories as part of the Stop the Steal movement. Okay, so that's what they're saying. Cyber Ninjas are pretty cool. I mean, they seem to be on the ball as well. Anyway, so that letter denouncing the Arizona audit was signed by Mark Lindemann, verified voting. Okay, and that's right there in the article. Brandon Center for Justice, a little bit more on them. This is the folks behind Mark Lindemann, who's behind getting rid of the audit in Arizona and getting rid of the audit, obviously, in New Hampshire. Now, the Arizona Senate wasn't stupid enough to select him and verified voting to do the Maricopa County audit, even though that's what the Maricopa County folks wanted, because they wanted an audit that wasn't an audit. They tried to sabotage this all along. And, you know, and this is why it's so easy to find the guilty, because they look guilty. They act guilty. They do everything they can to draw attention to themselves, you know, by shutting down the audit, selecting Soros-funded people, you know, people who say that, you know, there is no election fraud. You know, I mean, you can't wave a bigger red flag in front of your face than what the folks behind the vote fraud are actually doing. All right. Brennan Center for Justice. This is from the Gateway Pundit article. The Brennan Center for Justice out of NYU Law in Manhattan, that's New York University, the Democrats' most trusted election integrity outfit in the country, is most well known for being the front of the pack attack dog, barking incessantly that there is no such thing as voter fraud. It has issued massive numbers of opinions on the subject over the years, op-ed testimony, lead articles in fake news outlets. That's the Brennan Center for Justice. Is that the place you want to go? It says, it says, whenever an honest, hardworking voter integrity group comes along, like J. Christian Adams, the Public Interest Legal Foundation, the PILF, or PILF, I'm going to call it that, to legally challenge an election due to voter and or election fraud, it is always, and this is underlined and in bold print, always the Brennan Center that shows up in amicus briefs and court appearances to aggressively prove to the court that there is no such thing as voter fraud and election fraud is a myth. Okay, the Brennan Center is also the go-to place when a Democrat needs to assert to the public with scientific proof and statistics galore that his or her campaign and election were lily white because there's no such thing as voter fraud. Their words, not mine. Okay, that's what's happening there. I got more on this. I'm gonna skip that one. I've got some other things here that are happening. Let me tell you my public service announcements, and I'll come back with something that's happening with President Trump, which is really kind of interesting as well. I'll be right back.
Joe Biden's dark winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns. No representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
Yeah, I think I'm on a little bit of information overload this morning because there are just too many things going on, and I've got two reports. So I was trying to figure out, like I said, the reason I want to add a vaccine report, you know, the not ready for Facebook vaccine report, is because we're under attack here at Action Radio. Not so much on the show itself, because the liberals don't call. They just don't. You know, they like to do behind the scenes stuff, you know, trying to stop me on Facebook, trying to, you know, affect our vaccine project. And they've already disabled the Zelenko. That's Dr. Zelenko. Okay, you know him, all right? The Zelenko Action Radio Coronavirus Clearinghouse. And so anything to do with vaccines, they're trying to give you false information to have you actually take it. Well, Robert, I got some pretty startling news for you in the last half hour. But that's why I needed to add a vaccine report to Wednesdays to go along with the election correction report. So Wednesdays are going to be very information intensive. Some days we talk and we sort of hash out the issues, but in this particular day, it's kind of shaping up to be a really big informational day. Now, the folks I talked to is Chief Dan Skyhorse at the bottom of the hour, and Michaela Kerwin and Jimmy Smith of Concerned Veterans for America, and let them, you know, present material with which they're working with in Washington. All right. So this comes out of PJ Media. And it said, this is News and Politics, Matt Margolis, March 17th, 2021. So it's a little bit old, but it's still interesting. Trump vindicated as judge rules Michigan Secretary of State violated election laws. And why I think this is interesting, you know, is because Michigan has Antrim County. And I'm not quite sure the latest on Antrim County. I think their process is still underway as well. A judge in Michigan has vindicated President Trump by ruling that the Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson, a Democrat, broke state law when she unilaterally charged election rules concerning absentee balloting in the 2020 election. This ruling legitimizes a key claim made by the Trump legal team in its challenges to the 2020 election. So just to let you know, there were court cases. There were things going on. This is only a couple months ago. And so the problem with some of these things, you know, judges, they are doing the right thing. Okay, this is why I wanted to highlight this one, even though, like I say, it was last month. But it's interesting to, well, actually a little bit more than that now, but it's interesting to watch these things and see what's happening. So that's going on, and we're going to be following up and see, you know, just because the judge ruled, well, then what? You know, now we're waiting to see more, and we shall see what happens as it goes. Let me get you another report here. We're going to be skipping around a lot. Again, pretty intensive day. Okay, now this is probably one of the most underreported stories going on right now. Everybody knows that Tim Scott gave the Republican response to the Biden insurrection speech. All right, we know that Tim Scott, the racist Democrats, you know, branded him all kinds of nasty names, like Uncle Tom, and apparently one Democrat called him an Oreo. Okay, if you're not familiar with the term Oreo, I'm trying to figure out why my page isn't scrolling up so I can actually get to the article. Come on, guys. What are you doing to me? Let's see if I can refresh this screen a little bit here and get it working. Anyway, so this Democrat actually did that. And I've been waiting for the Republicans, you know, to do something. Websites and other pages are not responding. Okay, fine. Well, let's see. Come on, guys. Let's see what we can do here. Well, I can tell you the story. Oh, there it goes. It's moving now. It's moving too much. I'm going to go back and forth here. Let's see if I can make this work. This is, after all, live radio, which makes it just that much more exciting. It's sort of working now a little bit. Okay, there we go. All right. So this Democrat called Tim Scott an Oreo. You know, Oreos, you know, the black cookie with the white cream filling. Okay. So in other words, the point being black on the outside, white on the inside. It's an incredibly derogatory term. All right. But it's one I can say on the radio and not get banned. But, you know, like using the N-word, you know, will get me – I'm sure – you know, someone wanted to complain to Blog Talk, hey, you know, Penglis used the N-word, you know, so that's, I'm not going to do it, you know, not that I'm afraid of the word, you know, because of the context I would use it in is somebody else using it, okay? But just to be on the safe side, because I know how cancel culture works, and I kind of like the show, I'm not going to say that. But Oreo, anyway, so this is the article here from Daily Caller. If I scroll back up, yeah, so Daily Caller. And we've got May 4th. Okay, so just so, you know, yesterday. Come on, guys, just scroll down a little bit further. I'm really, yeah. Anyway, Autumn Klein is the contributor, and that's who wrote. Oh, here we go. Okay, finally. Thank you. So I've been told that if I have too much stuff on too many open windows, it slows down the computer. Now I've got, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to start leaving some of those computers. Let's get rid of that one. Maybe this will work a little better now. We'll try. Huh, it does work better. Oh, that's interesting. Things you learn as you do the show. So I'll get rid of the tabs as I don't need them. Democrat Party Chairman Gary O'Connor of Lamar County in Texas resigned Tuesday after facing backlash for calling Republican South Carolina Tim Scott an Oreo. O'Rourke called the senator the racially derogatory term Scott's rebuttal to present. I'm sorry, I swore at you. I misspoke. I didn't mean to say that. Thief in chief insurrectionist Biden's joint address to Congress Wednesday for the Republican Party. I had hoped that Scott might show, you know, some common sense, but it seems, you know, clear he is little more than an Oreo, no real principles. What a stupid thing to say. What an ignorant, dumb thing to say. This cracks me up, all right? Is the O'Connor faced backlash from fellow Texas politicians, including Republican Governor Greg Abbott, who called the comments disgusting, hateful, and completely unacceptable, and demanded his resignation. Okay, now this is the part that surprises me. He did resign, okay? And so this is fascinating. See, for a long time, you've had a Chief Dan Skyhurst on the line. I'll get to him in just a second. So for a long time, you've had this situation where Democrats would constantly get Republicans fired for, you know, the most insane, stupid, or you know, something that was acceptable when they were kids, you know, that they said, and that was unacceptable today, okay? All that, anyway, so this guy, Republicans have never called for Democrats to resign, but now they're getting some balls, at least I hope so, because they actually called for this guy to resign, and this Democrat did, you know, do over for calling, you know, Tim Scott an Oreo. Idiot. Moron. All right. Let me hold off the election. More stuff there. I'll get to more later. But let's get to Chief Dan Skyhorse, whom we haven't heard from a bit, because he's busy, I'm busy, life is busy. That's how it goes. All right. Time to change worlds.
The drum, heartbeat of the Creek people, like the first heartbeat you hear before you were born, like the heartbeat of the living spirit in all things. Join us each week at this time as we explore issues and topics important to the Santa Rosa Creek Tribe and American Indians across this great country. Join in as we enter the world of the Creek Tribe and see the world as they do through the eyes of Chief Dan Skyhorse, or in the Muskogee language, Chothloko Suja Miko. Chothloko Suta, Miko, Henshe, Estanko.
Anhitli dos, Mojinda.
Oh, he's got new words for me. I'll write those down. Yes, today is a language class. That's Muskogee for those of you that aren't quite recognizing what we're doing. And it's fascinating language. I don't know who devised the system of trying to spell it with letters that don't make any sense whatsoever. This is like inverse phonics. But that's the way it works out. It's the craziest thing. Hey, I haven't heard from you for a while, so good to have you back on the air. So I'm glad we had this opportunity to chat. So what did you just say?
I said I'm doing very well, and you?
Oh, you too. Yeah, just fine.
Unheathly does means I'm doing good or I'm doing well, and then Mojinda means and you?
Unheathly does.
Unheathly does.
Oh, unheathly. I'll tell you what, write it out for me, otherwise I'll just screw it up.
Okay.
That sounds good. Yeah, send that. I'm actually, there's, again, information overload today, and sometimes I think I sound completely incoherent when I do the show, and then I listen to it afterwards, and I go, oh, that wasn't quite as bad. So I think I imagine things are worse than they really are, although today is, I'm all over the place. I got the election correction, and now I've added the Not Ready for Facebook vaccine report. And so it's going to be a busy day, you know. So,
I have some news.
Oh yeah, please do.
News.
Yeah, what's
the
up?
the very latest CDC guidance.
Oh please,
so now they're
share that. I can't wait.
They're now recommending that you wear your seatbelt even when you're outside your car.
I saw that someone had a picture of that, this guy running around with a seatbelt on. Yeah, see, the CDC, people don't realize that the Center for Direct Control really has no authority. The only thing they're legally allowed to do is prevent people from coming into the country, stop them at the border if they're proven to have a contagious disease. That's it. You know, so all these other things are just suggestions. Now, who in their right mind would accept a suggestion like taking a vaccine, which lowers your immunity from 99.97%, which, you know, the population has right now without a vaccine, to the 80 or 90%, you know, that it'll be reduced to immediately upon getting the vaccine while risking random injury and death. Something that, this, you know, we just, I might as well say, we talk about this now too, because this might be information for the tribe, but the Dr. Zelenko, my friend, you know, who sent me some stuff on this and then talked about it on One American News, this messenger RNA creates every cell in them, you know, creates like thousands of other, you know, spike proteins. Those proteins create trillions more cells, which are screwing up blood vessels. They're creating thrombosis, blood clots. They're doing damaging lungs and heart, and they're killing people because this is an experimental vaccine that's not working. Okay. Especially since, you know, most people have been exposed to this already. We were exposed by last July. I mean, this is over last July. You know, everything else has just been lies. That's when they started changing the numbers and cooking the books. So the idea of taking a vaccine, which will systematically lower the natural immunity you already have, because everybody's been exposed to this. That was reported back on March of last year. I had a report from a vaccine specialist from Japan, who's a former public health administration person in the United States, who briefed Congress and said, look, everybody's going to be exposed to this. It's only a matter of how and when. It's probably not going to take that long. You know, and Dr. Fascist knows this. The health professionals know this. All these people know this. Now, are they going to take the vaccine? No. You know, most of the health professionals I've talked to aren't going anywhere near this. So just pass it on to the tribe and anybody else you can think of. Don't take this damn vaccine. It's dangerous. And here's the problem. There's no going back. Once that genetic material is in you and it starts creating those trillions of spike proteins, there's not a damn thing you can do about it except maybe huge amounts of vitamin C or things like that. But that's the problem. Don't get the vaccine.
Well, if you like being the guinea pig, yeah, take it, I guess.
Hey, it's from the government, and I know how much the Creek trusts the government, right? Well, actually, I'm curious. What is the feeling of the tribe? Are folks talking about this, or what's going on?
Not really. We pretty much didn't participate in it from the start.
Okay.
And we haven't had any. We have had people in the tribe who have contracted COVID, but none, they got it from somewhere else. We have not had anybody who has gotten it because of the tribe or because of our gatherings or anything like that. It's always been something that's from somewhere else, and the people who have gotten it are people who have not even been to any of our tribal functions within the last year. And it's pretty much, other than just slowing us down on being able to do our programs and such, you know, hasn't really affected the health of the tribe. We had one gentleman, I think I've told you before, he's 86 years old or something like that, and was in the ICU with COVID, and they had him on a ventilator, and he was going down and going down and going down, and called the family in to make a decision on whether to, you know, take him off the ventilator. So at the advice of the doctors, they took him off the ventilator, and about 2 hours later, he started breathing better. And then the last thing I saw, he was at it with his family out at a restaurant, posted on Bookface, enjoying a meal. So there you go.
Well, and that's wonderful. And I'm not a big, you know, truster of medicine. It's kind of interesting that I consented to having, you know, open heart surgery to repair a valve. It seems to be actually, I feel like, you know, for a long time I felt after that they gave me some old man's body that wasn't working well, you know, because everything was difficult. But just, you know, and now I'm actually feeling like I'm reconnecting. So this is something I want to explore in medical science too. You know, talk to my doc, which I'll be doing actually today, and saying, hey, what is this? How does this work? You know, because my own research is that, you know, when you go through something that that drastic a surgery, that your body has to kind of find its way back together again. The nerves have to reconnect. Everything else has to reconnect. And this process takes years. And I didn't know that. You know, I don't know if I'd known that going in. My choice would have been at this point death, you know, 1 in 5 chance, or, you know, major surgery with all kinds of, you know, adjustments to get back to normal. So I think it's worth it, you know, for the next, you know, however 34 years or whatever I'm going to be, you know, doing action radio. But but as far as, you know, they got the plumbing right. you know, I think they figured out the anatomy pretty well, modern medicine. I think they figured out how to, you know, unclog things and fix things and, you know, do the blood vessels and arteries and keep things, you know, circulating, you know. But when it comes to the drugs, I think they're totally wrong. You know, I think it was the drugs that almost killed me after surgery. You know, as my chest filled with fluid and I was suffocating. You know, it was probably like a day or two from suffocating when I went to the hospital. And they took a huge amount of fluid out of my system. I think with the blood thinners. I mean, because as soon as I stopped taking them, I was fine. What a surprise. You know, so I gradually dumped all the other medicines and I have felt better since. But it's the biggest problem with modern medicine is the medicine. It's the drugs. Because they're all by big pharma and they're making a profit. And I don't understand what's happening. You know, yeah, it sounds like you have a comment. What do you think?
You don't understand what's happening. It's called money.
Well, I do understand what's happening. But, I mean, you know, that's one of those comments that just kind of falls out of my head. It's you know, I mean, I know it's the money. But when you think about what kind of a lack of conscience, you know, I mean, are they all sociopaths, you know, all these corporate heads? I mean, are they that greedy or they just divorce themselves from it? Do they somehow disconnect from what they're doing? You know, and look at all these folks that are pushing vaccines right now. Even the insurrectionist, the thief in chief, is he wants to go to employers and force people to, you know, poison themselves, you know, to keep their job. That's going to be a huge challenge because constitutionally you can't do that. But the EEOC, the Equal Opportunity Employment, you know, whatever it is, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, there we go, has already said that, you know, it is constitutional to require a vaccine. And that's a bunch of nonsense. So they start going after people's jobs. This is going to get really bad because I'm not going to take one, you know, and a lot of other folks aren't either.
Yeah, I had a friend that said that he was going to take the second shot, but the waitress never came back.
This is why Dan's here for comic relief. Is there news to this? I'm hoping to get more of American Indian News sources. You know, are any other tribes having issues with this, problems with this? You know, what's any kind of news going around the country about this? I'd just be curious.
Well, just a broad brush of it. What I can gather, the tribes that immediately isolated and are now doing well. They mm-hmm. kind of beat it back. And they got in a lot of trouble for isolating from the government. And I think in the Indian community, it's pretty much been dealt with.
Yeah.
And I don't see anything, you know, where they're saying numbers are increasing or anything like that. It's just kind of, it's subsided. It's, I guess the sensationalism is kind of waning at this point.
Yeah. Nobody ever talks about, you know, how many people are actually dying anymore. And I think the numbers are so low, they're afraid to broadcast how low they are because then they wouldn't maintain the fear or be able to sell the vaccine. You know, I don't know how long it's been since I've talked to you, but I think I mentioned this. The shows, March 15th, 16th, and 17th, you know, laying out the evidence that the vaccine was created first and the virus was tailored to the vaccine to be able to sell the vaccine. That's where
you know, I had a thought about the virus thing,
okay.
and the vaccine. Exactly to that point. Did you realize that the companies that make police radar to catch speeders are the same companies that make radar detectors for citizens to detect radar?
Mm-hmm.
Did you realize that the computer programs, operating systems that are created, that it's highly likely that the same people created the virus in order to sell the antivirus or you know, the antivirus protection programs?
Oh, I know.
On software,
oh, you're absolutely right.
That they have.
Yeah, we talked about that. Yeah, and I'll tell you exactly how it was done.
Yeah.
It started back in 2007. I'll sort of briefly summarize those three shows. But in 2007, the Bush administration issued guidelines from the CDC. And they have what was called the Pandemic Severity Index. And I've talked about this before, which was a ratcheting up of security measures that we all know about, social distancing, masks, school closures, work closures, you know, stay at home, things like that. That was all in the plan. But the lockdowns that we had could not have been accomplished under the 2007 guidelines until you had over 1.8 million deaths from the virus, not with it, but from it. Okay. So we're talking about a major, a real pandemic. Okay. A, you know, that's when those measures can be imposed. And I keep forgetting the numbers. Let me see if I can remember them. Category one was 90,000 deaths. Category two was I think, 500,000. Category three was like 900,000. Category four was up to 1.8 million. And category five was above 1.8 million deaths. So for the first category, category one and two, there were no recommendations of closures or restrictions or anything. Okay. So if you're trying to sell the vaccine, you know, and if you have to wait until 1.8 million people have died, which they haven't from this in the country at all, not even close. Okay. You got to change the guidelines. And that's exactly what happened 3 months after Trump took office. Dr. Fauci and the CDC released new guidelines, which got rid of the pandemic severity index, which allowed them to lock down immediately based on nothing, based on whatever they wanted. Okay. And the numbers that came out of Europe, Neil Ferguson, the Imperial College, the person who was wrong about AIDS, the person who was wrong about SARS-CoV-1, the person who's basically been wrong about everything, all right, gave this number that 2.2 million Americans would die from COVID, which incidentally is greater than 1.8 million, which is what was required for the full lockdown under the old guidelines. So they had it going both ways. Trump, unfortunately, was lied to believe that. He still believes he saved the difference between 2.2 million and the 500, you know, thousand people that have died, you know, that are being reported. Now, here's what else we know. The numbers were fudged, okay? The CDC said themselves only 6%. Yeah, exactly. CDC said themselves only 6% of the 100% of the people that they're reporting have died have actually died from COVID, not just with it. So of 500,000, what's 6% of that? You know, 50,000 would be 10,000, would be 10%. So about 35,000 people have actually died from COVID. Well, that's not a big number. That's still category one under the old guidelines. It's half a category one. So no lockdowns of any kind would have been recommended. So the whole, so if you want to sell vaccines, you got to have a lockdown. You have to have a lockdown to generate fear. Okay. So this is how it works. The other proof that I know that the vaccine was created first was hydroxychloroquine. Because when Trump announced it back in May, the one thing you cannot have if you want to sell vaccines is a cure. Okay. Because if you have a cure, you don't need the vaccine. If the virus, right. my other revelation from the other day, if the vaccine goes away by natural immunity, which is what we have now, you don't need a vaccine. So they have to convince you there is no natural immunity. It has to come from the vaccine. And they have to convince you there is no cure. Because then if you had a cure, you wouldn't need the vaccine. The cure is really cheap. Hydroxychloroquine, zinc, ivermectin, vitamin D, vitamin C, sunshine, fresh air, you know, go to the beach, have fun. That's the cure.
Mm-hmm.
Cheap compared to the vaccine. Okay, so everything leads back to the vaccine. The virus was created. Here's my theory on the virus, where this really comes from. The reason they had to create the virus was because they had to create a pandemic. The reason they had to create a pandemic was to get a declaration of emergency. The reason they needed a declaration of emergency was so they could authorize vaccines under an emergency use authorization. The reason they had to do that was because if they waited for the normal 10-year process for FDA approval, the virus would have been gone 8 years before that.
Right.
That's my theory. That's how it works.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Total sense.
Yeah. Share this with the tribe. You know, and then you get to, if you want more details, March 15, 16, and 17, I go over it in much more detail. But essentially, that's it. That everything has been coordinated to sell vaccines, and nothing has been done. Everything to even talk about a cure has gone. You know, this is the first disease in history that doesn't have a cure. This is fascinating.
Or in some cases, it doesn't even have the symptoms.
Yeah. That's the beauty of the lie. I know we're a little off topic here, but think of the beauty of the lie that healthy people actually are carrying it and can kill grandma. This is the first disease that perfectly healthy people with absolutely no symptoms, you know, can have it and transfer it. And do you know how many people have actually been recorded doing that? None.
I'm going to go with none.
Yeah, exactly. None. There's no case proven where a person who had absolutely no symptoms, who was perfectly healthy, transferred COVID to anybody. Yeah. Crazy stuff. Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What else is happening in American Indian world? Either locally, nationally, or otherwise?
Well, locally, we have, last weekend, we were in a ceremony, traditional Creek ceremony, up in one of our sister tribes up in Georgia, and just had a great time and reconnecting with the roots, so to speak, and and it was a time of really grounding and just getting back to the basics of life and creation and spirituality. It was a renewing. I needed it desperately in the times that we're going through now and all we're having to deal with, and to be able to go back and just have a direct communication or so to speak with the Creator, and just get some pure and unadulterated energy. And it was an amazing renewing.
No, it makes perfect sense. I think everybody has to do something. In fact, I'd love to have those folks on the show if you want to invite them on sometime. You know, any of the Creek tribes from anywhere in the country, you know, any of the branches, you know, feel free. Of course, you can invite anybody on the show. But I think I'd definitely like to hear from some of the other Creek just to get to know the folks. Then we can work on the five tribes and we'll work our way across the country. We'll have like a whole delegation, you know, checking in with us at some point. What's interesting is that I think everybody needs an outlet. Okay. Everybody needs an escape. Everybody needs something that grounds them, as you're saying, you know, whether it's getting in touch with the Creator, whether it's doing something spiritual. What I do is I play music. Okay. So I have a new band starting. I'm going to hear more about that as we get going. Shaping up to be a pretty good group. And so we don't talk politics, although we got a little bit, last week, but for the most part, it's a music thing. It's an escape from everything else that's going on. And we've got, four guys, you know, getting together in a room, you know, playing. And, none of us really, well, I think the drum and the bass player knew each other. But, for the most part, we're new. And we're playing stuff, and it's working amazingly well. And there's a connection as musicians, as people that have, you know, a fair bit of practice behind what we do to be able to do this. And it's really quite interesting. But that's the outlet. So and when I play, I go into my zone, you know, and there's all kinds of things. I mean, I think we've talked about this before too, you know, whether you sail boats or do archery or, you know, shoot long range or something like that, whatever it is you do, there's a zone that you can go into, that connects you. And so I feel grounded and I feel the vibrations, and it's like, you know, the sound waves are a connection. You know, and so it's a spiritual experience, and this is why it's one of those things musicians, I think, know but don't really talk about a whole lot. But it's there, you know, in the same way that you connect, you know, with the spirit world, whether you're out, you know, out in nature, as they say. But that's not our nature. That's just, you know, you being part of the world. So, yeah, is there a Creek equivalent to what I'm talking about, or is like a word for this?
No, there wouldn't be a particular word for it. For the Creek people, it was life. It was what you are, who you are, and the realization that you are not the center of the world, but you are a part of the world. There's kind of a European philosophy versus a native philosophy about those things, and the European philosophy is the more of the I am entitled, I have rights, and the native philosophy is I have obligations, and those obligations are to take care of the people, take care of the earth, take care of the animals, take care of everything, to be respectful of all of creation. And if you imagine a circle with all of creation on that circle, in a circle, none is ahead and none is behind. There, everything is equal in that circle. But the European is more of a centrist philosophy or mindset. And the European philosophy is that as a person, you are in the middle of the circle and everything mm-hmm. revolves around you and your needs, your beliefs, your whatever. And that's just not the native way of looking at things. And that was a clash early on with when the European incursion came here to this continent, to Turtle uh-huh. Island. And so there were some basic differences from the beginning. And one of the things that the Indians were upset about with the Europeans was their disregard for nature and for the earth. And they would take more than they needed and were not very good stewards of the land. And the Indians saw that as an affront to the creation and to the creator. And so that caused some problems right from the get-go.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, people, we talk about environmentalists today, you know, preserving the earth. It's like, yeah, the people that have been here, you know, for 60,000 some odd, you know, years, we're doing a lot longer than that. So it's quite interesting. But yeah, I think the European view, and I sort of wonder this about myself, I think much more, I think of an American Indian view of thinking out as opposed to the European view, which is thinking up. And everything has to be a hierarchy. You know, everything is mm-hmm. you listen to the language of Europeans, it's always, you know, above and below. You know, I am rising up the corporate ladder. You know, the judge sits above the jury. The government is above the people. You know, whatever it is, it's all hierarchical. You know, more bank accounts, bigger numbers, a higher column. You know, and I think of in my life, I didn't even know, you know, I guess how spiritual it was because I never thought about that. I don't need to accumulate stuff. I like to accumulate experiences and skills and develop myself. And so, you know, I don't have to own an airplane. I can rent one, but I have the ability to fly one. Okay. And that's mm-hmm. another zone. That's another zone that's incredible. If you want to feel connected, you know, go up in a small plane, you know, where the, and this is something interesting too, that like guitars, airplanes, you know, rifles, sailboats, they become extensions of you. And if you want to connect with the world, and one of the ways I think that's fascinating to do that is to whatever your hobby is, whatever you do. And when you get in that zone where there's just you and, you know, you're able to express your creativity and connection through something else, whether it's a guitar, a sailplane. Have you ever been a glider, just for example? You want to talk about connection. That's a fascinating way to connect. But you should try mm-hmm. something. Or, you know, I've been up in hot air balloons. I've been up in pretty much everything that flies except I even been up in a World War II bomber. You know, I get to ride in the back of a B-25. That was kind of fun, too. Yeah. I want to do more of that. But the point is there are ways to connect. And I think that as European-based, you know, people who don't have or have not been exposed to, you know, American Indian creative spirit and connection with the world, their environment, you know, it's like environmentalists who are doing it for whatever reason, they're doing it other than to connect. You know, the real environmentalists are the ones connecting with the environment. The ones that are allegedly advocating for it to change it, they're missing the whole point. And so I don't know if you've noticed this, but anything that, or do you have some, you know, what instrument do you use to connect with the creative force? Like I say, with me, it's, you know, guitars and airplanes. And long range rifles. What do you, beg pardon?
My heart. My heart.
Know. Okay. Yeah.
And I say that not as an emotional thing, but as an energetic connection. That when you open your heart, open your mind, open yourself to Creator, there's a line that automatically will connect there. It's when we're not paying attention is when we don't have a connection.
Yeah, I guess I see it still as like an intermediary, you know. You know, I mean, like I say, I can walk in the woods and connect
with...
That
would be religion. That would be religion.
Oh, that's exactly... Yeah, it's funny you should say that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
But we don't have an intermediary. We have a direct connection with Creator, and we don't have the, you know, the dogma or the, you know, the guidelines or the rabbi or the pope or the anybody that's between us and Creator.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I don't, you know, like I say, I'm not a big, you know, church person. If I want to talk to God, I just, you know, do it directly. And he's laughing anyway. I think I was created for God's personal amusement, but that's another story. But you think about, you
now,
know, like
some
I
of
say,
the rest of us are amused by you too.
Okay, good. Anyway, I got Jimmy McKay online right now. Do you have time for a question from them if they have one, or do you have to go?
I need to go. I've got it's a busy day stacking up here, and I have to make a little money to support my Indian habit. So.
Yeah, well, listen, I have a day job to support my radio habit, but someday, you know, hopefully soon, we will both have, you know, big sponsors and things like that. I'll have to work on my connection. I gotta do more walking in the woods and bike riding and just getting out and
barefoot. Stand barefoot on the earth.
Okay.
Barefoot on the earth. All you got to do is stand there.
Hmm. Okay.
You'll get a connection.
Interesting.
Well, I will say, Nida Heathland Ojibus. Have a good day.
You have a good day, too. Utam Chihi Chatlis.
Utam Chihi Chatlis. Mado.
Thank you, sir. Mado. That's Chief Dan Skyhorse of the Santa Rosa Creek Tribe. And it's great to have him back. We haven't had a chance to chat for a little while, but that's definitely you know, highlight of my week. All right, things to play for you. I've got Michaela and Jimmy. We'll be back with the Concerned Veterans for America. In the meantime, here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements. And we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
All right, so we're back. I just want to let folks know, Jimmy and Michaela, that we're not as strict on time today. I've given some of the not ready for Facebook vaccine report already. We've been sort of talking about it for a good part of the day. I got Michaela's line right here, and I think Jimmy's calling in from a new number. We'll find out in just a second. Good morning, Michaela.
Good morning. How are you, Greg?
I'm having a very amazingly information overload day. This has been fascinating. Between the election and the vaccine problems, you know, we're doing a whole bunch of stuff. Let me see if this one's Jimmy. So just Jimmy, is that you here on this line?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I have two phones, having the wonderful life of working for CBA. And so, yes, this is my personal phone. I grabbed this one up and used it. Didn't even think about it.
Yeah, no problem. I'll just add it to my long list of phone numbers. Here we go. All right. So I just turn it over to you guys. Introduce yourselves and what's going on with Concerned Veterans for America.
Hey, cool. So wanted to just touch back on what we were just for the first couple of minutes. Last week we kind of left off talking about why the permanent war class in the United States. What is that about, and why do we have it? So I did a little research and we talked a little bit about it, and I think I have some answers. And we'll just run them by you and see what you think.
Okay.
I'm going to get a little nerdy here. I was a political science major and I did a lot of international relations classes. And one of the things that we talked about in that is this idea of liberal hegemony or primacy. And it's the idea that, you know, there are so many nations that are allies and governed with a classic liberalism, you know, freedom for all, democracy or republic, however it's represented. And that for the longest time was our foreign policy stance, right? And that was kind of how we viewed, even going back to Kissinger, you know, we have to spread democracy. And it wasn't just keep the spread of communism. It was we also have to spread democracy. So for so long, that's been our foreign policy approach. And so I think that's part of it. I mean, it's just a mindset, really, it's our obligation as Americans. And I tuned in kind of early and found your conversation with the chief very interesting because there is this idea with Europeanism that we are the center, right? And everything revolves around us. And our way is the best way. And that's not always necessarily true. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't times to intervene or there aren't times to go to war, but I think that is part of the reason we do have a permanent war class is because this has been the idea for so long. This has been the foreign policy mindset for so long. And one of, you know, CVA's counter to that is realism and restraint, right? We have to be realistic about what we are doing and restrained in when we are going to go to war. We can't just go to war to spread democracy or go to war to make sure that people do things our way. And I think that's kind of what we found in a lot of the wars that we've engaged in since World War II.
Mm-hmm. That's brilliant. That is absolutely right on. And both you and Jimmy are welcome to call in early if you want to talk to Chief Dan Skyhorse. And so he is fascinating. One of my closest friends here. And so it's always nice to have him on. Yeah. Go back and listen to some of our Wednesday shows. And you'll catch some incredible discussions we have. And because it's we don't even see Native American because that doesn't really apply. But American Indian, you know, point of view. On so many things from the creator to, you know, how we relate to our environment is the fact that we are a part of it and thinking out as opposed to thinking up, you know, the European is the hierarchy. What I noticed when I came to the United States is that this country more than any other believes, you know, the whole concept of American exceptionalism, which is good. This is an exceptional country and is exceptional in the history of the world. But what I find fascinating is the belief that Americans have that everybody wants to be us, okay? I love this country, don't get me wrong. You know, I'm a naturalized American citizen. I was born in Canada, spent part of my childhood in Australia. But what I notice is that other countries, and actually Obama said this, and he got criticized for it, saying that, other countries, you know, feel that they're the best country. You know, Greeks feel proud to be Greeks, which is true. That's part of my heritage. The British feel proud to be British. You know, Russians are proud to be Russians. You know, even though they may have tyrannical governments, the people themselves, you know, you've still got a Russian Orthodox Church going on in Russia, you know, despite the best efforts of the Communist Party to destroy them. It's still there. So people have a certain amount of pride. I think the arrogance of this country, and it translates to the government, to exactly the policy you just talked about, is refusing to see the world or see nations as those people see themselves. In other words, thinking that everybody wants to be us. It was the British philosophy back in the 1800s. You know, you ever see the movie Last of the Mohicans? You know, when the officer, who turns out to be a decent guy in the end, says, I thought the policy was make the world England, you know, and that's, you know, in the Pax Britannica in the 1800s. And they were at war with everybody, and they, you know, the sun never set on the British Empire. Then we had the Pax Americana after World War II. Everybody wants to be American. Well, everybody may want to come here for certain things, but for the most part, no. There's a lot of people in Switzerland that are really proud to be Swiss. They don't have to be American. So until we start looking at other people as they see themselves, we will keep trying to nation build. And the problem is the nation that we're trying to build is our own in some other country. You cannot build the United States of America in Afghanistan. It's not going to happen. So maybe we should change nation building.
Right, they have a culture that is... thousands and thousands of years old. They have a, and in most countries have cultures that predate the United States of America, and they're proud of that culture, and that's okay.
We have a culture.
The idea of having a liberal hegemony or a primacy view on foreign policy, that does lead to a permanent world thing is, I would say, you know, you asked me last week and I said, I'll get back to you on it. So I would say that the second thing is really, you talk to people and they don't quite understand the idea that, it is not the DOD's job to nation build. If we're going to nation build, if that's what we want to do, there are diplomatic units in place to do that. They're called embassies. There's NATO. There's the UN. If there's human rights abuses, there are other ways to take care of it than just sending in the military. You know, our defense budget is quite large. I won't say it's too large, but it's quite large. And in order to make sure we are securing the way of life for our children and our grandchildren, we have to tackle some national debt. So we cannot continue to use the Department of Defense to nation build. We can leave that to allies. You know, you often hear when you say, you ask people, do you support getting out of Afghanistan? Do you support coming out of the Middle East? Well, it's a really complicated situation, and it could create a vacuum in which there would be, and it's like, well, that's their country. If that's how they want to run it, that's how they want to run it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And let's let the UN and our allies, let's let other people jointly take part in this. It doesn't have to fall on America's shoulders all the time.
Well, I question whether we should nation build at all. I would not. I would not. I would let, you know, if you believe in individual sovereignty and national sovereignty, those countries should build themselves. And if they choose, you know, to not build the way the United States is built, then that's fine. There's nothing wrong with doing things their way, especially as you say, they've done it for thousands of years, predating the United States. And the nice thing about talking to Chief Dan, like I say, that you guys, you know, I think would benefit from that, is that we have a culture here, you know, Native Americans, American Indians, it goes back, what, some 60,000 years, they're finding out. So we've had that huge culture here. And so the Europeans came here to build a nation. Well, they actually changed the nation that was already here. And so that's arrogance. And so I think we need to take the arrogance out of our foreign policy and stop trying to, you know, make the world England, you know, or make the world the United States, because it simply just isn't going to work that way. And we shouldn't try. And it costs trillions of dollars. And we lose our own country to the national debt while we're building other nations. You know, it's like we're trying to do something impossible, you know, for other countries. We can't even see the problems in our own country. We need to fix that first, or we will lose our nation. Our nation will be unbuilt, you know, by the problems that we're causing now, you know, especially with the infrastructure bill and the climate change hoax and everything else that's going on. Jimmy, haven't heard from you for a bit. Want to get into this?
Well, you know, so I never interrupt a lady, first and foremost, and especially one who is so smart and so capable.
Get nerdy. I
mean, I
like when you get nerdy. That was good. Yeah.
Well, you know, she is at that level of knowledge and skills in the community, so the Panhandle's blessed to have her there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's part of when we hear the people talking about not coming out of Afghanistan, that, well, you know, they do. They talk about, well, this could cause them to go into civil war. And it's like, are we not supposed to stop other nations from deciding their future? Is that what you're saying? So should the British or should the French had prevented us from having that civil war, which ended slavery. I mean, that reality has to start hitting homes. Unfortunately, people are listening to CVA as we're talking about this. They are starting to grasp that reality that we cannot force a representative republic-style government that believes in freedom like we have here in the United States on anybody else. The best way to do it is show them through our demonstrated ability to, you know, be free and prosperous and let them want to be like us.
Well, why would they, you know, and I would even question that. Like I say, I've traveled, you know, pretty extensively through Europe. I was born in Canada. And like I say, I spent several years in Australia. Australians are happy being Australians. They don't want to be Americans. Okay. Now, do we share technology?
Exactly.
Do we have a lot of the same customs? Absolutely. And those are very close examples. You know, they're happy to be Australians. You know, trust me, I know. It's really kind of funny. But that's a peculiar American thing. And that's one of the things I noticed being an immigrant to this country. I just want to make a side note to Michaela. Get nerdy as often as you want. You know, I want you – we have a really intelligent audience. And so you can get as complicated and detailed, and we can go through stuff and weave, you know, whole branches of stuff. I do shows that last 3 days sometimes on one topic. So don't be afraid to just show us, you know, everything that you have, because that's only going to help all of us in the world better. Having said that, do you think that you folks have within you the sort of inherent U.S. view that other countries should be like us? And do you think that's an issue to think about? Michaela?
No, I think if they want to and they want to go about setting themselves up to do it, have at it. Like, I mean, I am proud to be an American, blessed to be Southern. But
oh, yeah, no, I agree.
Am,
this is where the future is. The South will save the country.
I don't think there's any reason for us to go and force. I mean, it really does. It reflects back to the British Empire. You know what I mean? Like, the sun never set on the British Empire. They were just... They conquered everyone and forced customs and cultures on people that didn't want that. And it caused a lot of problems. Even when you look, like, when you look back to the, it was in 1859 when they split up Africa between the French and the English and I think the Dutch. And they really went in and caused a lot more problems. Than they had ever had before.
Look at India.
You know, there was
India.
Yeah,
or Palestine.
I mean, exactly.
You know.
So when you think about things like that, are we not? I would argue that we're possibly headed down the same road. And if we don't really start approaching things from a realism and a restraint point of view, like, we have to approach it from that point of view, or we will wreck our country. We have to nation build our country.
Well, let me ask you a question then, Michaela. If we could, I wouldn't call it nation building, but freedom building. And Jimmy, I want your response on this too in a bit. But if the principles that we have, I believe, are universal. Okay, so the one thing we can export is that all men and women are created equal. We are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. Okay, we are born with certain things: the right to self-preservation, which includes firearms; the right to free speech; the right to worship. Okay, these are universals. Okay, now, do we tell people who to worship? Do we tell people what to say? You know, in their free speech? No, but we can export the best of this country, which is our founding principles, without changing a nation, you know, beyond what they want to do for themselves. So in other words, if we, and one of the best examples I think I'm hoping is El Salvador. I had an idea before that if we could go to, if Trump, for example, could go to El Salvador and work with the El Salvadorian president and bring in investments, you know, jobs, you know, create a situation where that country prospers with free principles, low taxes, you know, free market principles, not trying to change El Salvador from being El Salvador and trying to make them the United States, but have them use the free principles. You know, the pursuit of happiness, the accumulation of property, the universals that we have established so well in this country in principle, but we seem to be straying from now with the, you know, the communist insurrection that we have going on. But that is the best of our country. That's the thing we can export. And it's not nation building, it's freedom building. Would that be something that you and perhaps, you know, concerned veterans for America might want to think about, to change us from nation building to freedom building? What do you think?
Well, you know, let me jump in on this one because,
sure.
You know, one of the things that you have to understand, and of course, you being an immigrant, I'm sure you saw and heard about America before you came to America. And
actually, not
when
really.
When I spent
– no, that's going to shock you.
So I spent 10 years.
Uh-huh.
I spent 10 years overseas as a young adult in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found was that America has two options in the world. And this goes back to the aspect of how people see us. So,
okay.
A, when I was in Korea as a young man, the Koreans really didn't like Americans. They wanted our money, and, you know, they were in a very poor kind of country, okay?
Okay.
So there was not really a great image of the Americans. But the American image in Korea quickly changed. So by the time I retired out of the military, they liked Americans. They looked up to the Americans. More and more of the industries want to do trade with America and free trade at that. So you see
mm-hmm.
that there's a lot of things coming out of Korea, from cars to TV shows and animation and things like that, that is coming from Korea. So they looked at us and they followed our example. They didn't have to be forced to have our example. When I was there first, there was basically a military leadership style there, and then that subsequently changed to a representative leadership. And they've had their challenges, but they saw that.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in Panama as a young man, my first time down there was prior to Noriega, and there were people going around holding up signs of the first President Bush saying, you know, this is what we want. We want this kind of leader. Well, nobody told them that that was the right way to go. We exported who we were by example. And in the military, that's what you truly learn, is you lead by example. And we currently
okay.
have such challenges in our nation right now with divisiveness that we are not leading by example. And our director, Nate Anderson, I almost called the wrong Nate. We have several Nates in our company. Nate
okay.
Anderson actually did a joint article about that the military – can be that example. And we are an organization based off of many military or military family members. And that's how we can actually interact and give the rest of the world the understanding how to do things better. And that's why we take the actions that we do. That's why we are proactive. We can show true efforts to make our nation better, can be the example for others to follow to make their nations better. And we're not forcing our will on them. We're encouraging them to follow the best of examples.
Yeah. You're still looking at it, America first. And I still contend that that is a natural thing. If you're born in this country, raised in this country, despite, you know, spending time in other places. See, when I travel with the idea I was never going back to the previous country. To me, these were permanent moves. So I learned to adapt to the countries I was in and to see people as they see themselves. I just think that would be a much stronger way and a better foreign policy. Anyway, I'd be interested in talking to any of the Nates, you know, if you want to bring them on the show. We do have a local caller, it looks like. So I'm going to bring on our own 850 area code here and see if they have questions for you guys. So, local call, you're on with Michaela and Jimmy, and this is a Concerned Veterans for America, and, of course, I'm Action Radio. Go ahead. Or did you just want to listen? 850, area code, going once, going twice. You called the show. Okay. I guess I want to listen. This happens a fair bit that people will call in, and the best way to listen to the show, folks, is online. blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. You can listen on your phone, listen on your computer, listen while you're driving, listen anytime. But if you want to talk to me, that's when you call the call-in line, because this is, you know, a call-in show. All right. How is there a particular policy that this would help with, you know, Concerned Veterans for America, or something that you want to let folks know as far as nation building and getting out of Afghanistan?
Well, yeah,
what's
Michaela described
right
earlier. It's reason and restraint. So I'll let Michaela take the lead on this because she is such an incredibly knowledgeable young lady.
Well, there's a nice intro.
So,
go ahead.
It's just the idea of spreading that education,
mm-hmm.
and one of the ways we do it is we talk to you,
okay.
But we also have classes through one of our organizations called the Grassroots Leadership Academy. And we talk
mm-hmm.
about Foreign Policy 101, Foreign Policy 102. And we talk about the idea that, you know, war should be the stoplight. In the idea of foreign policy, we have a green light, a yellow light, and a red light. And war is the red light. Doesn't mean we never go to war. Just means we have to stop and think carefully and have a targeted geographic reason, a specific reason, a specific mission, a defined mission before we go to war. And again, do it constitutionally. So those are my big takeaways. Jimmy, you had something you wanted to talk about too?
Yeah, actually, and you know, part of that leads into exactly what she was discussing there. So the biggest thing, and since this is Action Radio, the biggest thing is how we demonstrate what we're talking about is through the actions and is through the things. Matter of fact, calling into your radio show, that should be the realization. Those are the people that make things happen. So we talk about international policy. We talk about this permanent war class. We talk about, you know, government contracts and all these things. But really, people have to realize that it boils down to the most important thing, that even though we're policy experts, I mean, and you're an advocacy and policy expert, okay, our
That's
policy
cool.
and our knowledge and our skills and abilities between, you know, CVA and action, you know, part of that is we don't move forward on anything until that person makes the call into your radio station or that person reaches out to us at our website or our posting on social media, Concerned Veterans for America or Concerned Vets on Twitter. You know, until they do those things, you know, we don't really have action. So we have policy knowledge. I mean, we talk policy every week now. And Michaela, as she just exampled, is brilliant at this stuff. But we need people who are listening to this, either now or later on, to actually start stepping up. This is the people's country. This is the people's representative in government. This is the nation that's supposed to be a republic. And the republic is something that is based off of the needs of the people, not the wants, but the needs of the people. And until we really start getting more and more of these every single day individuals, the person at the garage, the person who's driving a pest control truck, the person who's up in the attic putting insulation up there, those are the people who matter. I'll tell you this, and this is a true opinion, as a former elected official, matter more than the elected official. And when we, through policy, through advocacy, and through education, can get them to realize they matter more and they should take action, that's what really will make things change, allow us to then, again, be the example across the nation and across the entire globe of what true freedom and prosperity is, which is what CVA truly believes in defending.
Yeah. We'll get the contact information before you guys go, too. I got Pianchi on the line, who's one of our regular callers and a citizen legislator himself. Pianchi, you're on with Michaela and Jimmy from Concerned Veterans for America.
You know, one thing I heard, a couple things that is really, you know, you made mention about free trade. Now, what we want is fair trade. Free trade is on the other side because you have some countries that would impose tariffs on its manufacturers when they go to export abroad. And of course, if it's not fair, you have to impose a tariff when it comes into your country in order to protect your own local and home manufacturers. Another thing on the issue of war, I have seen the shot about across the bow here lately, and it really has began decades ago, where the liberties of United States citizens is being attacked. It's being attacked from the constitutional guarantees that we all should have. You know, I wish the military would send a message to Congress and say, what you're doing does not look like the Constitution that we swore to uphold and defend. And when you really lay it out on the table, that is what it looks like. You see attacks in our schools where you're teaching the kids to look at the United States as being a white supremacist country, the United States as being a country. You see them critical race theory, 1619 rather than 1776. And by the way, I'm a native-born black United States citizen, and I say this with conviction. Things have got to change and need to change quick. Thank you, Greg.
Oh, no, it's a great comment. Stick around for a while. We still have another half hour. Jimmy, you want this one?
Greg, I have to actually bounce off. I have another interview I have to do, and they're blowing up my phone. So,
yeah.
So
well,
Michaela,
this is fascinating.
Still here with you.
Michaela, do you have a couple more minutes, or do you have to go too?
I'm going to have to run too, but I do just want to leave you guys with one last thing. As I'm sure you agree, we are not dealing with nearly as strong an administration as we had a year ago. So although there have been talks that we're going to, the date's been set for September 11th, 2001. Don't know why that date was picked. I do.
This is 9/11.
I don't feel like it's time to celebrate, though. You know, it's bringing troops home from war is a time to celebrate, and I don't particularly understand why we would celebrate on that day. But but all that said, we still have to continue as citizen legislators to put pressure on the current administration to honor that withdrawal. It looks like it's going to go through, but as I said last week, if you haven't already, please text "bring them home" to 46262. Sign the petition. Tell Biden to bring them home. This is, there is just no more. We cannot do this anymore. We cannot finance it anymore. So that's
agreed.
All I'll leave you with for tonight or for today.
Okay. Well, and what I would leave you with is what Pianki said. You know, he's talking about the lack of freedom. It's kind of hard to export freedom to the rest of the world when we were kind of sadly lacking it here. And something I might want to talk about next week is the election, what I call the election correction. That's what I do in the first half hour of the show, the election correction report. To me, the single greatest priority right now is following through on the election audits and get that I won't say what I'm thinking, but get that thief in chief out of there, that imposter. The single best thing Concerned Veterans for America can do, I think personally, is back up the audits, maybe even help fund them, any of the other related organizations, because the Arizona audit, the Maricopa County audit, needs money. Windham, New Hampshire, I'm sure could use, contributions to their election audit that they're doing. In fact, they're trying to get the leftist who's been appointed by the town select folks, in out of there and someone decent in there. So that's something that might be a huge priority, because once that happens, once we can correct this election and put the right president, the lawful president, back in, so many of the problems we have in this country are going to change, including getting out of Afghanistan. So that might be a priority. You probably don't have time to talk about that now, but let's maybe think about that next week.
All right, we can talk about it.
Okay.
Thanks so much for having us on, Greg.
All right, we'll talk about it next week then. Thank you. And to Jimmy also. So Jimmy Smith and Michaela Kerwin are from Concerned Veterans for America. That was an interesting conversation. And so I can't wait till next week. And Pianki, you're still there. You see my point, though, as far as the election goes? That, to me, is the big priority. Are you unmuted?
It's a major thing that we correct the devious attempts that we have seen.
Mm-hmm.
In this past election, because the world is looking. See, fraudulent elections, corrupt elections, is not nothing new to the rest of the world. I talked to a person from Nigeria one time, and he said that there's one thing about the United States. If you corrupt in the United States, you pay. In my country, mm-hmm. you don't pay.
Yeah.
And that has to be the centerpiece of this nation, is that we don't stand for corruption. We don't stand for that which would deny the American citizen that protection of the U.S. Constitution.
It's like, we're becoming the rest of the world instead of being the shining beacon of freedom that we're supposed to be. And it's kind of hard to lecture the rest of the world on freedom when we aren't doing it ourselves. I'm going to switch a little bit here. I'm going to play something real fast. And then we're going to get to the new, the not ready for Facebook vaccine report. So hang around. This might get kind of interesting. I actually want your opinion on a couple things anyway. So we'll be right back.
Action Radio. Dangerously cool.
See, don't we have fun here? I've got so many reports here. On what's going on with vaccinations. I've got a school that refuses to let teachers teach who have been vaccinated. I find that fascinating. We've got a Canadian doctor here who's run into all kinds of problems, and this is from Vaccine Impact. There are two sources that will get you banned on Facebook immediately. One is Vaccine Impact. The other is Health Impact. They're both related. They're connected. And what they're doing is telling the truth on the dangers of the deaths, the injuries from vaccines. They're actually reporting the CDC statistics, and those are vastly underreported. So this is a whole lot worse than you can imagine. So I've got a couple of articles I want to go over. But before that, I got Bianca on the line here. So I want to sort of ask how you're thinking, feeling, you know, knowledge of the current messenger RNA genetic modification shots, you know, posing as vaccines. What's your latest?
Well, what I've noticed is that the ignorance in much of the public when it comes down to things like this, and also the fear, the inner fear, and it goes back to the education. You know, some of the things that would make this all common sense that I applied to it, it's what I learned when I was in school about the biological makeup and the things that threatens our biological makeup. I didn't have to depend on Fauci. I didn't have to really depend on the CDC. I don't even think maybe it did exist then, not to reveal my age, but that's what I'm seeing, the fear that's being imposed into people, and they run with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I never thought about that, but that's an interesting observation that the government policy is fear. And that they're imposing fear to sell vaccines for their masters in big pharma. And that would be Dr. Fascist, Dr. Birx, you know, all these other folks that are out there, the left-wing media that's pushing vaccines. You know, and again, the question I asked before, I can't remember a disease that never had a cure like this one. Oh, yeah, cancer, you know, and they're still doing research and things like that. But they do treat people and they do, you know, they can't actually eliminate the cancer. But this is the one virus that has never had, or they never talk about, a cure. You know, I remember when penicillin was the big cure for STDs, you know, or some other drugs with you know, chicken soup for colds, you know. I'm getting a little silly here, but the point is, COVID, they never talk about a cure. And the reason they never talk about a cure is they want to maintain the fear with false numbers and push you into vaccines. Now, why the government wants to do this, you know, the only thing I can think of is the Bill Gates philosophy, cut the world population in half, which is directly contrary to the fact that our illegal administration is bringing in countless illegal aliens, except white people, you know, across the southern border. At the same time, they're aborting, you know, black babies in New York in huge numbers. You know, we're living in a really strange time. So the vaccinating people for a disease that is pretty much gone. You know, they're aborting Americans as much as possible. They're bringing in illegals as much as possible in what I think is a replacement program. And people think this is okay. It's ridiculous. We're really in an irrational, insane time right now. And the most irrational is taking an experimental drug into your body for a virus that you've already been exposed to and are probably immune anyway. Go ahead.
Wouldn't it be nice if you could get Bill Gates' wife on your show and...
You know, it's funny you should say that.
I can't
give you details.
Give her a tablespoon of truth, spit syrup.
Listen, I probably shouldn't share this yet, but I have somebody working on that right now. I can't give you details. I, you know, in fact, I have a lot of people working on a lot of guests, you included. So, you know, this is all
well,
part
I'm
of
working
my
on the one also. The one that Alex Presley worked on, she's very protected by a booking agent. So,
let her know what we're going to keep this little secret from you folks for now. But let her know what we do, and maybe you know sneak in something. I mean, you got to keep at it. I've been after certain guests for years, you know, Newt Gingrich in particular. I mean, if Newt Gingrich were on the show, I could tell him what we're doing in 5 minutes, and he would be singing our praises across the whole nation. We'd have a million listeners overnight. But I can't get to him, even though I've gotten to his people, you know. But there's the gatekeepers. The gatekeepers, the minions who don't understand what we do here, you know, is really kind of staggering. Anyway, let me see if I can – I want to try a couple of different things. There's something – and I have to do more research on this, but it's the this idea that the COVID Consumer Protection Act, which actually banned not only information on hydroxychloroquine, but even preventives. Even things that build your immune system, that's now you can be arrested for doing that. I want to cover that. And I want to cover this article here. Parents flabbergasted. Miami school is forbidding teachers to get vaccines. I found this fascinating. Okay, this is in local10.com, so it's a local TV channel. And this is in Miami. See if I can find a date for you. Date, April 27th. Amy Viteri, investigative reporter, who says, Dateline Miami, some parents of schools at Centenary Academy say they are alarmed after the private school's co-founder sent an email Monday outlining the school's policy against COVID-19 vaccines. Bet you didn't hear this in the news. All right. Flabbergasted. I was wondering if it was even legal, said one parent who didn't want to be identified. Centenary Academy has campuses in Miami's Design District and Edgewater. I guess that's where rich folks live. School co-founder Lila Centner wrote to parents without citing any specific evidence, saying vaccinated persons may be transmitting something from their bodies that could harm others who aren't vaccinating, impacting fertility and the development of children. Have you heard anything about that? That a vaccinated
person... Well, no, I haven't heard anything about that. And, you know, another thing we make mention, you talk about the information, but the information can be disseminated, especially by the means which most people turn to today, not most, but a lot, and that's social media. You mentioned yourself that there's certain topics that if you dare to put out there, then you have to stand for the repercussions.
Yep.
And,
well, this is why I'm suspended, but I've also gone to, that's why I've gone to Free Talk, which is the One American News social media site. And to find me, it's freetalk.app, that's APP, /action radio. That's where I am. Really easy to find. I found there's a couple articles here that I have it's sort of been lingering around, and this is the perfect chance to cover them. So I'm curious what you think of this one also. The Alliance for Natural Health, they had this great website. They've got to hear, the article says, Feds on Vitamins and COVID, Shut Up or Pay Up. And this is April 22nd this year. It says, more lunacy from the federal government threatens doctors with $10,000 fine if they tell you the science about how vitamins and minerals can help with COVID. The Department of Justice, otherwise known as the DOJ, recently announced the first enforcement action against, quote, deceptive marketing of COVID treatments. The case involves a Missouri chiropractor who is alleged to have advertised that a vitamin D and zinc supplement could prevent or treat COVID, claims that are well supported in the scientific literature. This is a disturbing and outrageous escalation in the federal government's actions against doctors and health professionals that inform the public about natural ways of staying healthy during the pandemic, which is probably gone, underscoring the need to change the law to allow the free flow of information about foods and supplements. Now, I've heard about supplements being demonized before, but think about that. The federal government is actually levying $10,000 fines for doctors that are telling people how to boost their immune system. That's how bad this is. That's how bad the channel is towards vaccines. This is nuts.
Well, a lot of it has to do with the pharmaceuticals themselves, because there has always been this threat against people who speak on alternative health, homeopathics, herbals. They always have had to face this threat of Big Brother government coming down on them, being instigated by those who want to peddle medicine, pills, and syrups.
Yeah, I just looked up as we were talking here. They had a link, and let's see if I can get to this. It's actually fairly short. A bill, S-75, that is now the law of the land. In the Senate of the United States, this was December 20th, 2020, a bill to prohibit deceptive acts or practices in connection with public health emergencies resulting from COVID-19. And let's see if I can find it here. Oh, something real quick. And this is by the Federal Trade Commission. Violation. A violation of subsection A shall be treated as a violation. And there's just a bunch of silly stuff here. I'll have to read it. I wish they had I'll look for a really good summary, but that's what's going on. Let me get back to this actual article, because it's a lot more direct. It says, previously, the FDA and FTC, that's the Federal Trade Commission and the Food and Drug Administration, sent hundreds of warning letters to doctors and clinics discussing the role of natural medicines promoting public health during the pandemic. Now, take me, for example. I have from my local pharmacy these elderberry zinc lozenges. They're great. Elderberry is a known preventive, you know, for all kinds of viral illnesses. Zinc, you know, destroys COVID-19 and other virus genetic material, Okay. So I'm using that to boost my immune system. I'm also out in the sunshine, you know, getting lots of vitamin C. And if necessary, if I feel sick and if I have any COVID symptoms, I'm going to go great, you know, right down and get some either hydroxychloroquine or quercetin, which is almost as good, you know, and take care of it. But I know how to deal with this thing because I have the information. So I don't fear the virus. I fear the vaccine more than I fear the virus. So I don't need a vaccine, even if I get this, which may happen. You know, I know how to cure it. And if everybody just had this basic knowledge, none of the stupid things that are happening would be happening. None of the lockdowns, none of the mask mandates. But this is the biggest part is the control of information. People don't know just what we went over in the last, you know, 10 minutes. That's the scary part.
Well, Greg, it's the common sense that's not being so common anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The best research and the best medicine cure maker is the body itself. I mean, come on, let's face it. Back in the days of early man, there was no pharmaceutical sciences.
Yep.
As we have today. It was a natural thing that the human genome took on. And that is the best. When you use vaccines, you are circumventing a natural process.
Mm-hmm.
And just like anything else, if you circumvent it, it will feel as if it's not needed anymore and go away. But what happens when the alternative is no longer there and you present it with a case where the natural defense system would come in play? Well, now they got to revamp. They have to rearm, re-prepare themselves. Mm-hmm. And by the time it does, it may be too late.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting that that a vaccine, a chemical, alleged chemical immunity can take over and prevent your own body from doing natural immunity. And the big difference is the chemical immunity is geared for a specific virus, whereas your natural immunity is designed to fight off all viruses. You know, and so the more, it's like the flu shot. The more you take the flu shot, the more your body becomes dependent on the flu shot to fight the flu because it takes over for your natural immunity. And the flu shot itself
Absolutely.
Gets weaker and weaker. Yeah, and the flu shot itself gets weaker and weaker because now if you see these ads for Fluad, although I haven't seen them as much this year, but Fluad, you know, they have an ad out saying it's four times stronger than it used to be. Why? Because it doesn't work anymore. That's why they had to make it four times stronger. And they do that with something called an adjuvant. An adjuvant is some chemical or a substance like mercury or aluminum or something else that's really dangerous, but it's really cheap to make the vaccine more powerful. That's why they put it in there, okay? The other thing they use is a chemical called squalene. And for those of you that are familiar with me talking about that, especially WBY, when I had veterans on all the time, squalene is the chemical suspected of causing Gulf War syndrome. And guess where it is? It's in your flu shot. It's probably in the COVID shots too. Okay. So if people start coming down with Gulf War syndrome after a COVID shot, check and see if squalene's in the ingredients, because chances are, if it is, then it is. All right. Let me back to this article here. This is really amazing. I think I'll spend the balance of the show just in this part. This is the law. This is from the Alliance for Natural Health, talking about the COVID Protection Act. He says the law, the law prohibits deceptive acts or practices associated with the treatment, care, prevention, mitigation, or diagnosis of COVID-19. Violation of which can result in civil penalties. Statute of laws, the FTC, that's Federal Trade Commission, those are the folks that do, you know, regulate deceptive advertising. I mean, that is their job. But the problem is this is being used to suppress information, not correct information. So it's being used backwards. Anyway, statute allows the FTC to assess $10,000 fines for each violation. Multiple fines can be doled out based on a single claim. State consumer protection laws could also come into effect, allowing potential class actions. Can you imagine being sued for telling people that vitamin D will help you with COVID immunity? That could have cost me $10,000 just for saying that. You know?
Yeah, you're right. It sounds ridiculous, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Article says this is a clear warning to those in the natural health profession, which they're trying to get rid of also, right? Because Big Pharma doesn't want natural health, right? So this is another war that's going on that people aren't talking about yet, so that's why I bring it up. The warning is either push vaccines and drugs for COVID-19 or keep your mouth shut. And I agree. I think that's an accurate assessment of what's going on. It's another little paragraph here. The DOJ's actions are astounding. For one, we are in the midst of a pandemic. Well, I don't believe that. How long are we going to be in the middle of a pandemic? I mean, that started April, of last year. So for the last year, we've been in the middle of a pandemic. Is it ever going to end, or are we always going to be in the middle of a pandemic? That in itself is deceptive. Why can't people get arrested for saying that? Just a thought. Are you there? He's listening. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So anyway, back to this. But okay, here we go. For one, we are in the midst of a pandemic. Okay, and don't have time to wait for the ongoing RCTs. I'm not sure what those are, which can take years. I guess that's a review of the vaccines. This is which can take years when strong clinical evidence shows that supplements that pose little risk can be helpful. And the evidence we have for things like vitamin D and zinc is strong. This is the Alliance for Natural Health, who recently reviewed the evidence for vitamin D's role in COVID, noting the dozens of studies that show COVID patients with higher vitamin D have better outcomes, not to mention vitamin D's key role in immune function. There are also clinical trials confirming vitamin D's ability to prevent upper respiratory infections. And COVID is an upper respiratory infection. That's what it is. Okay, so vitamin D is one of the single best things you can do to build your immune system and prevent upper respiratory infections. Why would that not be national news? Why would that not be out there, you know, all over the place? Why didn't President Trump, instead of succumbing to all those lies that he was told, say, wait a minute, I don't believe this. I want to check this out for myself. And say, you know what, I found vitamin D works too. So get your hydroxychloroquine, get your vitamin D, get your zinc, and you'll be fine. You know, that could have stopped this pandemic cold last year, but he didn't. He got lied to, and he believed the lies. And that has cost this nation dearly.
Well, you know, one thing, too, that has to be made mention mm-hmm. is that your bodily immune system has a superb way of handling mutations of that which invades the body. And the mutation is nothing more than a cloaking device. It tries to fool, come in under another disguise, a Halloween mask, per se. But when you do a vaccine, a vaccine doesn't have that ability, from my knowledge. It doesn't have the ability to handle the mutation. So what does that mean? You got to get another vaccine. Because just viruses are intelligent. Mm-hmm. They're not dumb. That's why they've been around so long. They learn by mistakes, and they learn to come back better. But the body is also very intelligent. And it learns how to handle these things. Now, when you take zinc, your zinc is just replacing a key component of your immune system that has used it up in fighting off a previous battle. It happens in real war. Don't you have to replace the armory with new missiles, with new bullets?
Yeah, once they're used. Yeah, all of our nutrients are definitely for the life of they last as long as they until they're used. Vitamin C is particularly short lived.
You got to replace.
Yeah, I think vitamin A can be stored in your fat cells, but vitamin C is only good for a certain number of hours and then it's gone. You know, so some of these are very transitory. It's funny she mentioned zinc. That's the next paragraph in the article here. It says zinc is also incredibly important for immune function. Although more common in the developing world, 12% of Americans are estimated to be at risk for zinc deficiency. We know that immune function is compromised with zinc deficiency. Indeed, those with low levels of zinc are at much greater risk of being hospitalized and experiencing severe COVID disease. There's increasing evidence for the role of zinc in reducing the severity of COVID-19 disease and also in COVID prevention. Saying that will get you arrested and a $10,000 fine, just to let you know.
Well, you know, another thing, too, here, we as Americans, we do things that we call protecting ourselves, but actually it's shielding ourselves from the natural way that we acquired those minerals. We wear shoes, especially synthetic materials on our shoes rather than natural leather. We clothe up with all sorts of clothes. We even put tattoos on our body, which shields the epidermis from taking in things that it normally would. And finally, we don't go around naked.
Well, I wish some people did. That's another story. There's some people that shouldn't. There's some people that shouldn't. It's funny you should say that. They had to get naked on the show.
We look at society where they're near naked. They don't have these problems.
Well, you know, if the good Lord wanted us to be naked, we'd have been born that way.
Well, aren't we? I have yet to see a baby come out the womb with a three-piece suit on and a tie.
Yeah, funny how that works. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, yeah. we haven't had any levity. This has been a very serious show today, so it's good to kind of lighten things up a little bit. But you almost have to laugh, you know. I have a doctor's appointment today. I know they're going to try and convince me to take the vaccine. I'm going to look at them like, what? Do I look suicidal to you? Do I look stupid? Do I look like I want to poison myself with some untested experimental thing that's going to make me a guinea pig? Let me tell you what Dr. Zelenko said yesterday. Dr. Zelenko was on One American News yesterday. So if you can get the report or get his video with Caitlin Sinclair, it was brilliant. And what he's talking about is he was trying to explain a letter that he actually sent me that's out there. It's on a it's a complex way of explaining what I'm about to try and explain right now. And that's that the messenger RNA shot that you get brings thousands and thousands of cells in your body that create, it creates instructions on how to create a spiked protein. These spiked proteins turn into trillions of cells in your body. Those trillions of spiked protein cells clog up your arteries and veins. They cause blood clots.
Yeah, it causes blood clots.
Yeah, they cause, thrombosis is the medical term for a blood clot. It ruins your lungs, it ruins your heart, ruins everywhere in your circulatory system. So basically the vaccine, depending on how many trillions of these, you know, spike protein cells they create, can kill you or cripple you or injure you or make you miserable or cause you, you know, minor symptoms. But all on the, you know, and people are getting the symptoms early, like within hours of the vaccine, and that doesn't count what's going to happen, you know, 3 months, 6 months, a year later, because this is a permanent change to your body. This is a permanent change to your DNA. You cannot go back from a vaccine. You cannot change. Well, you can change the effect a little bit with massive doses of vitamin C, and I got that from Dr. Tenpenny. She's got videos out there. You can look up those. But yeah. You know, so COVID, you can get over easily. So here's the other thing, too. Why would you take a vaccine that 99.97% of the people are going to have at worst moderate symptoms, that has already gone away, that people have already been exposed to, I'm hearing nothing about new cases or deaths, you know, if there are any, actually from COVID, and you were going to take a vaccine for this to prevent something that's going to lower your immunity anyway? I talked about this earlier in the show. They're talking, you know, 80 to 90%, 80 for the first shot, 90 maybe for the second shot. Okay. See, but you're still below the 99.97% that you have already. So the best case scenario is you're going to reduce your immune protection 10% and then worse than 20%. And then that doesn't count all the random injuries and deaths that are going to happen because of the vaccine. Why would anybody in their right mind take this? It makes no sense.
Well, they don't know, Greg. That's just it. They aren't in your right mind. And I would advise you that when you go to the doctor for your appointment and he asks you, have you taken a shot? Lie and say, yes, I have.
Huh.
Then after the end of your appointment, he say, well, you look perfectly healthy to me.
I generally don't do that, but they did try it. They told me last time, said, it's time for your annual flu shot. I said, no, it's not. I said, why? I said, because I've never had a... It was my 92nd morning. I said, because I've never had a flu shot. How can it be time for my annual one? I don't get them. And I feel the same way about those as this. You know, I think I had... What?
Don't feel lonely. I haven't either.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a lot of folks haven't. You know, and the thing, and you still might get the flu. But I'd rather have the flu naturally than take a flu shot, you know, that's going to cause all kinds of irreparable damage to me. You know, I was reading a vaccine detoxing site, and they talked about, you know, it may take, you know, the rest of your life to get the aluminum and the zinc the mercury and some of the other dangerous chemicals and heavy metals out of your body from earlier vaccines. You might spend your life doing this, you know, by eating healthy doing detoxes. Here's something, too. I'll probably post this as well. Department of Justice. I got 40 seconds left. Department of Justice and FTC announce action to stop deceptive marketing of purported COVID-19 treatments. I'll ask you to post this on some of our sites, but yeah, it's right there. And they announced this big thing. Hey, we're going to stop the Consumer Protection Act. It's really the Consumer Protection from Information Act is what it is. And that's where we stand right now. Okay. We have about 10 seconds left. So let me just, for everything, but yeah. So this is when we're going to do our vaccine report, the not ready for Facebook vaccine report, because pretty much everything we talk about during this report would be censored on social media. All right, I got to go. Thank you, Bianchi. back tomorrow.
Thank you.
On a Thursday. Should be a great show. And so Greg Fengles for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Podcast should be available in the next 5 to 10 minutes. And we'll see you tomorrow.